Interstellar Fundraising Auctions presents Black Tie and Tales, brought to you by our partner Sojourn Ventures, featuring your co-hosts Greg Quiroga and Devon Bell, and with this episode's special guest, Bobby D. Ellard of Call to Auction Fundraising. Welcome to Black Tie and Tales, where we share tales of triumph and tragedy from behind the scenes in the wonderful world of fundraising auctions. I'm half of your co-hosting team, Greg Quiroga, joined as always by my co-host, Devon Bell.
Hello, all.
And we are joined today by our guest, Bobby D. Ellard of Call to Auction Fundraising.
Hey, guys, I'm so stoked to be here today. This is something I've really been looking forward to be hanging out with you two. I've loved the growth of the podcast and the evolution that you guys keep making within this. So I'm honored to be here.
Appreciate it, Bobby D. And Devo, whenever they say to like, you're an auctioneer, can you talk fast, right? What's the number one question when people find out you're an auctioneer?
What? Oh, yeah. How can you talk fast? Yeah.
Bobby D. can talk fast, man. Bobby
oh, D., just a little
I'm
bit.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot to make you do it because I hate the dance monkey dance routine when anybody said
25 out of 35 out of 45, 55, 65, 75, 85, 100 out of
102, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Auction champ at one point?
Yeah, world automobile auctioneer champion.
Wow.
So I worked. Yeah, I beat, 100 of the best in the world in 2015. And like, even it surprised myself. I was like, holy cow, I beat these dudes. These guys are amazing. But every champion has a day. They got the best set of judges that they could ever have for themselves. And that happened 10 years ago. That's like chapter 5 of the book.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I look forward to, hopefully the final chapter doesn't get written while we're doing this podcast.
Thank you.
May this podcast not be the end of any of our careers.
Yeah, right. Don't jinx it.
And a lot of thoughts, one mouth. When you won the Automobile Auctioneer World Championship, were you into fundraising at that point?
I actually was. I had the foresight, or I had the vision of what Call to Auction to be, of what it was at the time, which is where I wanted to be into a full-time fundraiser. And this was, kind of taking the steps that were there. We're building business, we were identifying clients, we were finding team members to be a part of the team, kind of steps and steps and steps and steps. And then in 2018, I got to take that leap and jump and be like, that's it, full-time fundraising. So the answer is yes. I got to do automobile auctioneering 3 days a week. And then on the Thursdays and Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays, I got to do fundraising. But then there was that point where, you've got to have that board meeting at, 10:30 on a Wednesday. Well, that's smack dab in the middle of auction time. I had to make a big decision. Am I going to be an automobile auctioneer that does fundraising, or am I going to be a full-time fundraising auctioneer? So then that's 2018, jumped off the ledge, still waiting for the parachute to open, but it's a fun ride.
That reminds me of an old Bizarro cartoon, if you remember Bizarro.
Comic strip. Dan Peraro.
There's a Bizarro where it was split into two frames, and the top frame was three guys falling down a bottomless well, and they're all panicking, and then it's same three guys 6 months later, and they're just... riding it out,
right?
Because it's bottomless.
Only be terrified for so long.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you made the jump to becoming a professional, like fundraising auctioneer full time, did you find that you were getting pushback from people on actually paying you? Like, was it like, oh, well, we've had a volunteer for years?
Oh my gosh, this is a fantastic conversation we are about to have. I can already feel it. So the answer is yes. Like, every time, especially as a beginning auctioneer, I mean, I was lucky that I was in a market where there was a predominant fundraising auctioneer that was out there in the world. And I'll shout her out. Her name is Letitia Fry.
Go Letitia. She's
helped me out so many different opportunities early on in my career. And I think she was unexpected of how then soon we would be competitors. So we wouldn't really be competitors swapping events back and forth. But anyways, lots of praise for her. And in this market, she was commanding a good fee for professional services. So this did make an easy step for me to be able to come in. However, there's still those that had, like, again, those volunteers. I like to call it the 0 to 1. Going from the volunteer to a professional, first time, 0 to 1. So there are, even still to this day, we have these conversations, this 0 to 1 conversation. So we want to, definitely show the value of a professional. And like, I mean, many times they're like, oh, okay, well, if we see, you know what, 8%, 10%, 15% in the stock market, we're happy, right? But if you're an auctioneer and you come in and you're a fundraiser, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm going to, you know, help raise your fundraising 8%. They're going to look at you like, nah, that's not good. Okay, how about 10%? No, that's still not good. How about 50%? Well, you're warming up. You know, here, let's do, you know, 2x, 3x, 5x, and that's it happens. And then once they take that step from zero to one and they see that what is truly, you know, capable, one event I had hosted just this past year, major hospital foundation here in New York City, and we 10x'd their paddle raise. I'll say it again, 10x.
What?
10x. From volunteer to professional, 1 year, 10x.
That's don't spread the news on that, because we don't need to live up to that kind of expectation management.
It can happen though.
I'm only joshing because we live at like this episode's theme is pros versus volunteers. It's a great segue, because get three auctioneers together and oh gosh, who knew they would talk? But it's a great segue into the theme. And I think one of the challenges is that we live in this role, this world that we inhabit as professionals, where they're willing to give a volunteer a shot at it. And
here's
happy
a microphone,
if the
go.
What's that?
They're like, here's a microphone, go.
Yeah, here's a microphone, go. And that, and then when, and they, I've heard so many stories of volunteers tanking auctions or barely making the same. And then when they come to you, they're like, yeah, well, if we're going to pay you, we need to multiply it by 10, right? Like the expectations are just off. It's a strange niche that we inhabit.
Yeah, I have certainly experienced, and I'm sure you both have, where they're using you and everything's fine. And then, someone on the board says, that looks fun. I'll do that. And
for
what
free.
I'll always say to them, number one is you get what you pay for. So, you know, and then number two is keep my number. And after next year, see how you feel.
Call me back. So. Right. That,
go ahead.
Devo. Yeah. I'm thinking this Devon, you know, but it's like Devo, buddy. So this happened exactly to me. Yeah. Worked with a school for 4 or 5 years. It was great. You know, part of their community. And then the same thing happened. And then they call me back and they're like, Bobby, we got to have you back. I'm like, okay, well, how much did you pay the last guy? Oh, no, he was free. I was like, well, what was the fundraising difference? Oh, it was $35,000. You paid that guy $35,000 to do this? Right. And they're like, no, that's not what we made. I'm like, well, you pretty much could have.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. That's a well put.
Except that guy didn't get $35,000 or your school didn't. So then we've been working together ever since.
Nice. I had a pitch last week, and I'm having a follow-up pitch with the rest of the committee tomorrow, but I had a pitch last week, and she was like, you know, that's a lot of money for 1 hour. And I said, sure, I'm going to be on stage for an hour, but I am at work from the moment I show up at your event till the moment I take the stage. I am networking, I'm chatting with people, I'm trying to get new donors. Not just that, but that 1 hour on stage, I have 10,000 of those hours. And if something happens on stage, I've seen it, and I'm going to know how to react to it. And so here's a case in point. So I was working with a local nonprofit in San Francisco, an arts organization, and we kept having these like good auctions, but everything would max out at like $4,000 to $6,000. We'd have a successful fund to need, but the auction would max out at like $4,000 to $6,000. We just couldn't crest that $6,000 mark on any items. I mean, we had really fun auction items. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Frederica von Stade, the opera singer, but it was go play golf with Flicka, right? I mean, like, well, interesting, cool stuff. Jake Hagee's a local composer. He composes. Flicka is a local opera singer. She sings. And so at this particular arts organization, we have Jake and Flicka to come to your house. Jake's going to write a performance, and Flicka's going to do it for you at your place, right? Really super cool.
So cool.
And
so cool.
And I feel okay naming names at this point because it's going to be the good version here.
All right.
We tend to shy away from getting sued, but I think this one's
good. Good CYA, buddy.
Yeah. We'll tell the tales of triumph. We'll name names. And the tales of tragedy, we'll leave the names out to protect the innocent. This particular organization, I look in the front row, and Gordon Getty is sitting at the founder's table. And I've seen variations on Gordon. Gordon's a wonderfully generous man, mm-hmm. but if, yep. like any donor, if you don't task him with supporting the organization, he's not gonna. He's gonna show up and enjoy a good show. And so the auction opens, and we do the first lot, and it's a warm-up lot, and it's going fine. And you know, Gordon's not doing anything, but I don't expect him to play. But the second lot is the Jake Hagee and Flicka come to your house lot, and Gordon starts bidding. And I'm like, ooh, we got the came to play, Gordon. This is fun. Ooh, and there's four cool. bidders.
Got
there's
the hook.
Gordon, two other people in the mid rows. And then way in the back, there's this woman way in the back. I can barely see her, but she's bidding against Gordon. And so it accelerates 3, 32, 35, 4, 40. And now we're at 6. And I'm like, okay, you know, like I don't want to jump it too quickly. So I keep it at the 2s and 3s. We get to 7. I'm like, I got to move to 500.
Yeah,
here we go, 75. Two of the bidders drop out, but she's still in. And I'm like, great. So 75, 8, you know, 85, 9, 85, 10.
9, 10.
And at 10, Gordon does this.
Who the hell is that back there?
Right. That's Ooh. My first thought
yeah.
is who's been to get. But I'm like, you know what? I don't know the context of what's happening here. Right.
right?
Like,
you just,
I don't.
You're in
I,
it.
I don't want to insert myself into this process unnecessarily, because when the richest guy in the room goes to check who's bidding against him, everybody knows the joke. I don't need to make it, right? I don't need to say anything. And so Gordon looks, comes back, and keeps bidding. Bids it all the way up to 12,000. She drops out at 12,500, right? Gordon wins for 12. Crowd goes wild.
Yeah.
Come to find out, the person bidding against him is his assistant, Lisa.
Aw, juice in the action.
He had come to him during the cocktail hour and said, Aww. Hey, we should get this lot. Follow my lead.
Nice.
Right? And so, like, I had nothing to do with that other than to make that process exciting, right? To make mm-hmm. it good. A volunteer could easily have, like, don't look at them, look at me, right? Because that's one of the lines
right.
that people use.
Yeah, when totally.
You're going to let them do that to you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, inserted yeah. themselves in all of these ways. And an interesting, like, tangent from this. So Lisa is sitting at this table with these board members who hate the auction, leave during the fund-a-need normally. But here's this woman at their table who they don't know, who suddenly bid 12,000, 11,500 on something.
They ain't going anywhere.
They bid 1,000 each in the fund-a-need. They felt pressured
shame.
By her.
They were shamed.
They bid it.
So not only was it 12, but it was extra thousands that were there.
14.
Oh, I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And it just goes to show what peer pressure does. The value of somebody raising. Well, I can save that for the takeaway. I'll save that for the takeaways. But here, let me take a real quick break, because Black Tie and Tales is brought to you by our partner, Sojourn Ventures. When you're auction is in need of some international travel, check out Sojourn Ventures. They curate trips to Bali, Spain, and now they got 3 options in Italy.
They do you Puglia, Salento, or Cortona.
And Venice.
Well, no,
oh, wait. Cortona is in
Cortona.
Spain, actually. It's Puglia, Salento, and Venice in Spain.
There you go.
Join the wedding festivities, if you will.
Your bidders can spend a week on the coast at the heel of Italy's boot in warm Mediterranean waters. All these trips have reasonable consignment prices. Sojourn offers over a dozen curated packages that include round-trip airport transfers, full-body massages.
Yes, please.
Daily breakfast, in-home chef dinners, and more. Your buyers enjoy... I heard your little bell. Your buyers will enjoy 2 top-level concierge service and 2, count them, 2 full years to redeem their trip, all at reasonable consignment prices. Check out SojournVenturesTravel.com or look for the link in the bio of this podcast.
Click below.
So, last episode, I told the story of, and it's funny because we used it on the last episode, so I'm not going to retell the whole thing, but told the story of board members coming to us and saying, coming to an organization. I think it was the same organization with the Getty story, actually.
Ooh, a repeat offender. Maybe it's not you. It's,
they,
no.
they came to me and they said, we're going to go fund the need only, and one of our board members is going to do it. And we know how that story ended.
Oh, yeah.
Ouch, ouch. You don't need to tell that joke again. But, you know, being a professional and not saying professional because you got to hire a professional. Yes, you do. But it's the intricacies that happen of that and the amount of almost like we were just talking about ADD before we got on the show here.
Sure.
Of literal auctioneer ADD that you have to have at the same time because you've got your major sponsor here. You've got your major donor here. You've got your board chair that's over here. You have your stage manager over here and your development director over here. And then your executive director back here. And the other 500 people that are in the audience that are there. And so many times we're managing all of these different conversations and intricacies, and we're making sure everybody's having a good time, everybody's happy. You know, you may have those auction lots, and this is something that we've seen before that you can, you know, do the magic double on, you know, yep. that you're like, hey, we actually have two of these. And that dance that has to happen, that you have to make sure that you have both parties that are in, make sure that they're both on board, make sure that they're both excited, because this has backfired on me. That's like, you know what? We've got two of them. And then the backup bidder is like, you know what? I don't want it.
Oh, yeah.
They were
caught up in the moment and they're happy to be let off the hook, right?
Or that too, yes.
Yeah, they're like, yep. Oh, well, you were just in. I don't like to lean on because I want them to come. I don't believe in killing the golden goose.
Yep.
But that's or the moment, sold, you got it because you bid.
Yeah, that's a moment I'll lean on them because like, okay, you were in at 6,500 10 seconds ago. We'll give it to you for 6,500, right?
Yeah. And being able to again, like, you know, dance that dance and making sure that that's happened. And that could be a slipping point is a slipping point for a non-professional to be, you know, to have that happen. Cause it's those intricacies of the Greg, you said it the best, you know, those 10,000 plus hours, or those repetitions of being in that and being able to read that. Greg, I want to ask you a question. Sure. Sorry to take over the interview here.
Please,
real quick.
No. It's not an interview.
Do you still get surprised by things?
Oh, gosh, yes. All the time. I still get surprised by things. I still get nervous before I go on stage, actually. I'm just really good at channeling those nerves. And yep. What I tell everybody is the day I'm not nervous, fire my ass.
That's right.
Because that means I don't care.
That's right.
But I still get surprised by stuff. Good and bad, you know, like, but we tend to we tend to remember the bad because that's just the way our brains are wired. But like, I still get surprised by good stuff. I'm trying to think of like the biggest surprise because I always have recency bias. But you talk about the if then, right? It's not that I'm bored of doing auctions. It's that I've done enough auctions that I can think about other things while I'm doing auctions. And so I encourage clients. I'm like, hey, let's do an if then. Right. And like, yeah, what do you mean? Yeah. I said, well, if we like, so you've got a consignment.
If we get to here.
Right. We've got a consignment package. Right. And one of the pitches that I used to be really vehemently opposed to consignment packages. I'm like, we're taking money out of the room. Why would I want to take money out of the room? And one of the consigners came back to me and said, fine, then do my consignment package last. You're taking no money out of the room at that point. It's the last thing of the evening. And I'm like, oh,
yep.
Okay, I'll try that. And lo and behold, and also because Bobby D, you're friends with Beth, you know, Beth does data, but Beth Sandifer, yep. We love Beth Sandifer. Yep. Shout out Beth Sandifer.
Yeah, events. Yeah.
If you ever need anybody to crunch numbers for you at your auction and come up with data that you didn't know existed, Beth Sandifer is your human. She
event genius
taught me all about how people who bid are not the same as people who give.
That's right. Two different donors. Yeah, one, I've come up with a whole philosophy straight off of this.
Oh, yeah. One's a value prop and one is being philanthropic.
And so if the value prop people aren't going to give at a higher level, then sure, let's leverage consignment. So I'm doing a consignment. Yeah. I'm doing an auction, and it's one of those dream auctions, Bobby D, where everything sells for $25,000 to $50,000.
When you start, it's a sea of paddles, and you just say numbers. You're not actually pointing at individual paddles. You're just raising numbers.
The opening bids are, you know, they're just guidelines, right. Really, for where we're starting, and the increments like those with like. There are some auctions where you know I'm going to be grinding out $100 and $200 in my increments all night. And that's fine. That's what that night is. I embrace that. I try to have fun with it, right? Like that's
but
what that
if
night
you
is.
Feel the vibe of generosity, you're like, let's go. You know,
this
we're going to do $1,000 bids.
Never less than start the bidding at $3,000, $35,000, $4,000, $45,000, $55,000, you know, just like yep. you never even. And so our final lot of the night is a sojourn trip. and it's to go to Cortona. I think it's for four. It's
Cortona.
It's got the whole deal, right? It's got the chef to come to your place and blah 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 blah. They've gone all in on the best sojourn package they can put together, and we did an if then. If it gets to 10,000, sell it three times. Cool, great. So the bidding, and it's late, it's dark, it's outside in a vineyard in August, so it's late and dark, and people are like, we're at the end of the auction, people are tipsy, and this trip to Cortona gets going, and I get a bidder at 10, a bidder at 11, and a bidder at 12, and I look back at the person at 10, and I can tell they're done, right? You just know.
You can read it. You've got the experience.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm like, hey, whoa, tell you what. I've got dispensation. We can sell this $10,000 if you want it. And they say, great, I'm in for 10. And 11 says, yeah, I was in for 11. I'll do 10. And 12 says, I was in for 12. I'll do 10. And then the rest of the room wakes up.
Right. And you're like, anybody else at 10?
10 more people.
10 people.
And we sell 13 of them at $10,000. And so that's a good surprise and a bad surprise, right? Right. Yeah. Like $130,000, you take the whatever the consignment price off. You take the consignment price, let's call it three for easy math. The charity's still walking away with $80,000+ off of that alone.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, and the most important thing that the charity is walking away with this is a relationship. This is something that I've continued to embrace. A consignment, it's a relationship, because anytime we say sold, this is now that chance for the organization to steward and foster that relationship, which gets missed so much, and I hate it. But that, again, is having a professional to be able to manage that and have 13 new valuable relationships that are coming in that have capacity to give $10,000, maybe more. Who knows?
Yeah, no, mic drop. That's a fantastic point.
Yeah.
And tripling a lot is tightrope.
Yes.
Doubling a lot, sure. Not easy, but tripling a lot, all of a sudden you're gauging that third bidder becomes the most important person in that equation. Again, it comes back to that kind of stuff. It takes hours and hours of practice on stage to get good at it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think you guys said it. You both touched on it, which is if everything's chugging along, if you get an absolute rookie, they don't even know how to close the lot, right? They don't even know how to going once, going twice. But what we can bring to it is not when things chug along. It's when something weird and different and out of the ordinary happens. I can remember 6 years ago when this happened, and boy, I blew it, right? And then 4 years ago where I did it differently and it went better. Mm. Like, right, that's what they can pay for. What I always tell them is, you know your organization better than me. Mm. So you can tell me about that. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you I've done a couple hundred of these, and so it's going to hard to have a situation that I haven't addressed in some way before.
Yeah.
I can tell you, show you what has worked in the past, best practices, and we'll plug it in as best we can to your crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There was one instance that just happened here recently. It was the zoo on the East Coast. And it was they had been using professional before. They're like, you know what? We just want to change the music now. So we're gonna try something different. So they bring in different energy. You know, it's just like at the club. You know, they drop a different beat, they play a different tune, it changes the vibe. So they're like, okay, let's change the vibe. So it came in, changed the vibe a little bit, we did significantly better than they had. You know, it was like 50-60% more. It was great. But then at the end of the night, I'm just mixing and milling, and I'm sitting with the development officer, and we're talking with one of the bidders, not even a winner. I mean, they did probably raise their paddle one time. I think at $1,000, nothing to... But we're just chatting and da-da-da-da. And I asked the gentleman, I'm like, did you have a good time? I was like, oh, my God. He's like, yeah, I had a great time tonight. He's like, you know what? I had such a good time. He's like, we wanted to do something transformational tonight. He's like, well, how much did you raise? We're like, $142,000. He's like, I'll match that.
Good night. Good night, everyone.
But just the pure fact that it was still that relationship, it was still that conversation. And yeah, and I could literally see the development director crap her pants right then. And I was like, we're going to go to the bathroom. But it was just the the entire experience that was within all of it, there was no cringe moments. There was no what I like to call record scratches that happened that like, you said what? You know, those different things. And it just feels good all the way through. And it just builds momentum and it builds generosity and it builds inspiration and all of that. And it just can, I mean, it's like making a beautiful sourdough bread. You just, I'm getting hungry. So, but in San Francisco, I mean, got to throw it in.
There you go.
But that's what a professional can do versus the volunteer that's kind of scared, because when crowds see that volunteer on stage and they're kind of scared, they're scared themselves. They like feel bad for that person. Oh, yeah. They're like, there's no way I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, and I think that's right on. And in that vein, talking about a volunteer versus a pro, I used to tell the first 5 years, I told my clients, don't spend money on professional spotters because there's no way to mess it up. I got to catch the bids. Like, I'll train your people, just bring in volunteers and we'll do it. And that was until I used a professional spotter.
Right.
And like, wow. Right. Like,
boom, changes, game changer.
Yeah, exactly. The catching bit, it's not a good, you know, like a hype person or a ring person is a better name, because catching the bids is not what they're doing.
No.
But seeing a pro, I just did.
They're making it happen. They're shucking, they're jiving. Emotion creates emotion.
Yes. When there's a bidder who's in the action, they go over to them and get up in their grill and
let's have some fun.
Boy. They're like, they're hype man. You got this boy. They can't touch you, you know? And when I used pros afterwards, I was like, okay, that was money. Well, that was seriously getting money out of the room that you wouldn't have otherwise.
And they can 100% say things on an individual one-on-one basis on the individual level that we can't say from the stage.
Yep. Right.
Right. Yep. Like they can have a little bit more because I tend to err on the side of the lowest common denominator. I have fun with the people I'm having bidding with, but if I say something through the microphone, it goes out to the entire crowd. Everybody hears it. And when you say something about somebody, even if it's 10 seconds, they hear hours.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so when you say it over the microphone, and if you say something that irritates the bidder, boy, do they hold it. But but the hype people, the ring man, the ring women, the ring leaders on the floor.
We call them fundraising ambassadors.
There you go. I like that. The fundraising ambassadors. FAFO, fundraising ambassadors.
I got to put it out. As Scott Jones is the one that came up with that, so that's I don't think you got it copyrighted yet. But anyways, I'm 100% a proponent of fundraising ambassadors, hype men, you know, ring men, ring women, ring people, you know, that are out there to help create that energy. It's a huge, you know, ingredient of call to auction to have a professional ring men that are there. Now, it's a part of our training program of bringing people from ringmen into, you know, professional fundraising auctioneers. And it's a part of, again, like I say, a part of their training, kind of a stepping stone, because there's so many times that as auctioneers, we can tell people about situations, but it's until they feel that situation and they're in that situation and they see a reaction to that situation, then can come back to it later. Then they're like, oh, that's why you did that. That's why you did that. Yeah. And having those professionals in the room. Now, I do have to really make a shout out. My wife, Erin Ward, my favorite auctioneer in the entire world. She has, I'm super excited for her. She is just celebrating 20 years. With Star Benefit Auctions. And it was one of the first female-owned auction houses in New York City. Anyways, just thrown out. I get to be her ringman. I get to be her hype man at some of the events. So I get to be the one that's running around, that's, you know, getting the energy going, the hooting and the hollering. But Devo, like you said it the best, it's like you're able to get in there and like I get real close. It's like, okay, friends, this is a special night. You know, we're here to make something really special happen. You know, if you can give me $25,000, I'm going to make a huge deal out of it. Are you with me? Let's go. Let's do this. And they're like, yes. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the whole crowd just lights up at that time. And then I get to run to the other person and be like, okay, now if you go 30,000,
we can make it a deal.
But it's building that energy that's in there and having, you know, Greg, like you said, that one-on-one conversation, that celebration of what's happening at that time. Also, you know, mission. I educate every one of my ring people, my fundraising ambassadors on what we're raising money for so that if they need to slide in there, you know, hey, let's do another 1,000 for the kids. Let's do that here, you know, tonight for the boys and girls. Let's do this. You know, this is a great school. You love this school. Let's go. You know, they're there to really kind of keep that focus on that, you know, that mission and that impact as well too. And I think this is a great comparison of volunteer spotter
yep.
to professional fundraising, ringman, hype man, ambassador, whatever you want to call it, to be determined.
Well, and I remember the first time I spotted for my mentor at one of his auctions, I'd been doing liquidation auctions for a while at that point. I was totally comfortable being an auctioneer, I thought, and being in front of, you know, being in front of a crowd. And he was doing an American Heart Association event in San Francisco, one of those dinners where everybody was talking and it felt like nobody was paying attention. And I was supposed to spot for him. And I was like, I don't really feel the vibe in this room at all. There's nobody doing anything. And he got on stage and just committed to doing his thing and like did his fundraising. That now I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, he did what we understand is the performance. But I was too self-conscious as a wannabe ringman or fundraising ambassador trying to come up. I was too self-conscious. Volunteers who are part of the organization who know people in the crowd are I tell people, get me 8 volunteers and let's hope 3 of them are good.
Yeah.
Right?
If we're using volunteers, you know, bring me 8, and if 22-26% of them are any good, we'll be happy.
You know, I want to point out one thing that you just said at the best was being in a room where nobody's paying attention. As professionals, it's our job to really to focus that energy and to focus on that mission, focus on impact, focus on this is what we're here to do. And that crowd, if they don't have someone that's there, then you know, they're going to loot, you know, they'll just ignore you. So like you were saying, Greg, to like be able to just do it and go into it and we're going to do this thing. What that interesting experience that happens is then now you're going to have that focus on the fundraising. And that, again, where you go again, we put that compare contrast against volunteer and professional. Like, I mean, why are we even squabbling over a few $1,000? It's not that big a deal. It's like, come on. But what can happen is there's a term that I've been using lately called irrational generosity. And a professional is the one that they're the expert in creating that air of that. Because I mean, Greg, Devo, I'm sure you both have stories of that irrational generosity where somebody stands up and they buy a Christmas tree for like $100,000 just because they want to, and they want to give, and that's that professionalism. That's that air of generosity that we're able to create, where you've got the other side of that, which I don't need to talk about anymore.
My mentor called it irrational philanthropy.
I use that phrase all the time in consulting, and you hit on it so perfectly. Yeah, bump it up, Bobby D. You hit it there so perfectly. Is during the consulting, what I will tell my clients is, look, from both a warm and fuzzy, we're all in it together, community mission moment, and a making the most money per minute of the entire night, the fund a need should be the centerpiece of our entire life program.
Yep.
And what we're setting everything up for is, yes, we're going to be expository along the way. Yes, we're going to show the link between the money they give and the change they want to see in the world. But when the moment comes that we ask for the money, that I say, all right, who's in? I want people in their feels. I want it to be a feeling, not a thinking. Yep, a feeling, not a thinking moment. And whatever we have that has the oomph, that has the most tear jerking, the most not a dry eye in the house, the most tug at the heartstrings, let's give them that right before we ask for the money.
Hey, amen, my brother. Right. Preach on.
So now, one of the things that, as professionals, like stage performance aside, one of the other elements of professional fundraising auctioneer involvement in an auction is pre-event consulting. We get involved with our events. We chat in advance. We give and we lean in. And I know, Bobby D, you had been enthusiastic about talking about trends of 2025. And so here we are. It's like it's summertime. Everybody's going to the beach and hanging out. But we're also like, this is where we're really starting to lean into planning our events for fall, and we're starting to have those consult. Like, we should already have been having those conversations. We should have lots secured and ready to go for most of the events. But in terms of like trends, what are some of the trends, or what is some of the advice that you are leaning into with your clients for the fall season?
Make events experiential.
Huh. Detail.
So you've got to make it memorable from beginning to end. I mean, even when the invite goes out, like, it's got to stand out from the rest of the noise that's out there in the world. But make it an experience to look forward to. As soon as they enter, wherever they're entering, make that a big deal. Make the registration process fun. I'm trying to kill the idea of the cocktail hour. I want to change it to the connection hour because it puts the wrong connotation on what we're supposed to be doing there. Sure. Yes, we're going to be drinking cocktails. That's a given. Hmm. But this is where we're able to connect donors to the mission and connect guests to donors. So that's going to be an experience in your program. Make it memorable, make it experiential, make people go home and tell their friends about this. Like, they're at church the next day, they're eating breakfast, they're at work, they're like, I was at this gala and they did this. Like, that's what I want people to be looking at. I want them to be able to create that. And you can't create that, I was at this gala and they did this, without a professional. So that's where I'm seeing is these experiences that you can't find anywhere else that ties to a great cause.
But you see how elegant what he did.
That was nice.
We saw that.
Yeah.
We saw that, Bobby. Shades drop.
I took that ride with you. And here I was expecting, like, don't do jewelry in an auction.
Yeah.
Oh, did I go too deep?
No, not at all.
I am a bit of a fundraising philosophy.
We had jewelry in the auction, and not only did we have jewelry in the auction, it wasn't pretty. It was not accessible. And not only do we have not pretty, inaccessible jewelry in the auction, but the jewelry store that donated it put max value on the donation.
Insurance value.
Yeah, totally. So it was. I love the connection hour, that because some of the best fundraising events I've seen have had some element of connecting mission during that first gathering time, whether it's through scavenger hunts to go around and learn things from stations, whether it's video screens that are just basically telling the message and the story, whether it's members of the organization or people who serve who are there to share their story. But I love Connection Hour.
And I love you talking about it being experiential, because I think it lends itself to your guests leaving the event. Maybe they spent a little more money than they expected to, but what they're talking about is not how they feel weary and leaned on. They're talking about, this happened and it was so cool.
That's it.
I can't wait to come back next year.
All right. I've got one more insight that I've seen. It's called the Anti-Gala. I don't know if you've seen that yet or not, but it's happening. And we're working with a lot of organizations that are looking for something different than the Black Tie Gala. Sure. And we're kind of coining it the Anti-Gala or the Un-Gala, like the Un-Cola kind of thing. It's just a bit different. And we're actually doing a webinar here in about a month on that and talking about how to create one of these different events that's not so gala-y, where you've got the beer, you've got the wine, you've got the, you know, the cheese, all of that, the program, 20 minutes less, fundraising, paddle raise, all in, all done within 2 hours.
Link in the description of the podcast.
Amen, brother. All right, guys, I know we got just a couple minutes left. I got to first say, it is so cool hanging out with you guys.
Back at you, Bobby D.
So cool. Like, I it's so rare, and this is such a very lonely industry where it's to be able to just rap back and forth like this and kind of talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like, oh, this gets me fired up. I want to do an auction tonight, but I'm not.
No, you're so right. It's you can't talk shop with just about anybody. Like, how about those flashing glow sticks? Too much. Too much.
Oh, and the centerpiece. Oh my gosh, the centerpiece.
Tall centerpieces and pillars. The bane of our existence.
No way. We could go on for days.
Well, thanks, Bobby D, for joining us today and spitting wisdom as always, brother.
Oh, thank you so much for having me too. And keep up the good fight. Like, I'm so stoked to see the new episodes come out, and keep listening to this. And let's just keep diving deeper, because there's more impact to be made. And together we can all do this.
Thank you, listener, for joining us for this episode of Black Tie and Tales. As always, you can find the podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, and all your favorite podcast distribution channels. You can also find it at blacktieandtales.com. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe, and we will see you next time when we talk about, and then it all went
Sideways, south, sour,
good?
Bad,
I don't know.
Good. Dun, 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 dun. Thanks, Bobby D.
Bobby D, appreciate you, brother.
Thanks, guys.